welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up in this hour, a mystery later on from Box 13 with screen actor Alan Ladd from 1949. But first, the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes with the story The Uneasy Easy Chair from the Mutual Broadcasting System, first heard on May 13th, 1946.
Free Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now I'm sure our good friend Dr. Watson's expecting us. Let's go in and join. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Punctual to the minute, as usual. Draw up a chair and settle down, my boy.
Well, I won't settle down too far, Doctor. You have a habit of keeping me on the edge of my chair during most of your stories.
Just as it should be, Mr. Bartell. I hope tonight will prove no exception, so light up your pipe and I'll get on with my story.
Doctor, from the hint you gave us last week, it sounded like quite a thriller. How did it begin?
On a cold winter morning in 1897, Holmes and I, our breakfast just concluded, sat on either side of a cheery fire in our Baker Street lodging. A thick fog rolled down between the line of dun-colored houses, and the opposite windows loomed like dark, shapeless blurs through the heavy yellow wreath.
Another London pea super, huh, Doctor?
Exactly, Mr. Bartell. Our gas was lit and shone its flickering light on the white cloth and glimmer of china, for the breakfast table had not been cleared. Holmes was busy cross-indexing his record of crime, while I was engrossed in one of Clark Russell's fine sea stories. Our morning was not destined, however, to be a quiet one. So shortly after 11 o'clock, Mrs. Hudson ushered a young lady into our room. A young lady... Down, won't you, young lady? I'm Dr. Watson, and this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
How do you do, gentlemen? I must apologize for not giving my name to your housekeeper, but I have to be so careful.
Yes, we quite understand, my dear.
Of course, you're wondering who I am and what brought me here.
My own theory would be that you are Miss Harriet Irving, and that you've come to me to elicit my aid in proving that Mr. Binion did not murder your father.
Holmes, what on earth are you talking about?
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Holmes. But what? How did you know?
I deduced it, Miss Irving. You're wearing very new and extremely expensive mourning, presumably for the first time, since a few basting threads are still in evidence. You wear no rings, so evidently you're not in mourning for a husband. The only man whose death the papers announced in the past few days and who left a young daughter wealthy enough to purchase such garments is Sir Edward Irving. And since the police have already made an arrest, obviously wish me to disprove the police theory and intercede for young Binion.
Mr. Holmes, you're wonderful. That's just what I want you to do. You will, won't you?
Miss Irving, I've studied the newspaper reports very carefully. It would seem to me that Scotland Yard has arrested the right man.
Well, I'm very sorry, but I didn't read the newspaper reports. I haven't the faintest idea what you're both talking about.
Then let me bring you up to date, my dear fellow. And please correct me, Miss Irving, if I make any mistakes. Now, 3 days ago, Sir Edward Irving, the father of this young lady, was found stabbed to death in his study. The only entrance to the study is through an anteroom, where his secretary had been sitting ever since Sir Edward was last seen alive. And the secretary swore that no one had entered or left the study.
The secretary's name being Binion, I suppose.
Yes, under the circumstances, it's hard to see that any other arrest was possible.
And yet I know he's innocent, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, and how do you know that, Miss Irving?
We were in love. We were going to be married. I don't care what the police say. A woman knows these things. Robert Binion did not kill my father.
Did your father approve of the engagement?
Well, no, not exactly.
If one were to be exact, Miss Irving, wouldn't one say that your father absolutely forbade the marriage?
Yes, he did.
And Inspector Lestrade assumed that was the motive for the murder.
Well, sounds logical, I must say.
Does your father have any other relatives living, Miss Irving?
His brother, my Uncle Peregrine. He lives a hermit's life in the country. We've seen very little of him in the last few years.
Was he left anything under your father's will?
No, I was the sole beneficiary. Please help me, Mr. Holmes. If you'll just talk to Robert, you'll know he's not guilty.
Oh, there's no harm in talking to him, Holmes. After all, our old friend Lestrade handled the case, and he's made a good many mistakes in the past.
Well, haven't we all, old chap? Well, Miss Irving, I'll do what I can, but I promise nothing.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Where is your fiancé being held?
At Scotland Yard. I talked to him there just before I came to
Scotland
you.
Scotland Yard, eh? Splendid. We can talk to Lestrade at the same time. Watson, your hat...
My hat and coat?
Precisely, old fellow. Your hat and coat.
Oh, Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson think they know more than the Yard, eh? come over here to teach us our business, I suppose.
Nothing of the sort, Lestar. We came over here to make a few inquiries.
I'll tell you, gentlemen, that you're wasting your time. Young Binion is guilty, whatever his young lady may say.
Lestrade?
Yes, Mr. Holmes?
What did the autopsy prove?
Well, got a report of it here on my desk, but it won't tell you nothing you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Death was instantaneous, caused by some weapon like a long needle, a fine stiletto, or an ice pick, penetrating the brain at the base of the skull.
And no such weapon was found in the room.
Or on Mr. Binion.
True, sir. Then he had the chance of disposing of it.
Just the same, the murder weapon hasn't been found, has it?
No, Doctor, but we'll find it. Don't you worry about that.
I should like to talk to the prisoner, if you don't mind.
Well, of course I don't mind. He's in the detention cell just down the corridors from here. Follow me, gentlemen.
Has he given you any trouble, sir?
Trouble? If all our prisoners were as quiet as him, we wouldn't need no guard, Doctor. Nice, quiet young fellow. Hard to realize he's a murderer.
A fact that still has to be proven in court, Lestrade.
A fact that is going to be proved in court, Mr. Holmes. Well, here we are at this cell. You've got visitors, Binion. Very distinguished visitors.
Who are you, gentlemen?
My name is Holmes, Sherlock Holmes, and this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
I'm sorry to see you in this sight, Mr. Binion.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Then Harriet did come and see you when she left here. I'm so glad. You'll get me out of this mess. I know you will.
Even Mr. Sherlock Holmes can't get you out of this one, young fellow, my lad.
Mr. Binion, I promised your fiancée that I'd try and help you. My obvious course is to go to Sir Edward's house and examine the room in which the tragedy occurred. But before I do that, I'd like to ask you a question or two.
Ask me any question you want to, sir.
It was you who discovered the body, I understand.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Please describe the circumstances.
Sir Edward was in his study. I'd been working in the anteroom adjoining. At 5 o'clock, I went in to say goodnight to him, and I found him slumped in his chair, dead, with blood streaming down the back of his head. Of course, I sent the butler for the police at once.
Could anyone have entered that room without your knowledge?
No, Mr. Holmes, I never left my desk. And there was no other entrance to the room save through my office.
Well, how about the windows in Edward's room?
They were locked from the inside, Doctor.
Oh, you don't need to worry. We examined the window ledges, not a mark. No one came in that way.
Now, what is your theory of the murder, Miss Binion?
I haven't one, Mr. Holmes. I'm completely baffled. I'm certain that no one entered that room. Yet I swear to you that I didn't stab him. I can understand the police believing I did.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Stroud, I should like to examine the room in which Sir Edward was murdered.
Well, easiest thing in the world, Mr. Holmes. I'll drive over with you if you like. His house is in Knightsbridge.
Oh, you needn't bother, Lestrade. We can quite well go by ourselves.
Oh, not a bit of it, Doctor. I'd like to come with you.
Why, Lestrade? You're convinced Mr. Binion is guilty, are you? Won't you be wasting your time?
Not me. For once I know you're on the wrong side of a case, Mr. Holmes. And I want to be there and see your faces when you find it out. This is the house, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, it's an imposing looking place, I must say. I imagine, Lestrade, that you still have a police guard inside.
Oh, yes, Doctor. There's been a sergeant guarding the dead man's room day and night. We still haven't found the missing weapon, you know.
Yes, gentlemen?
I'm Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard. We wish to examine the house.
I must see your identification, sir.
What are you talking about? I've been in and out of this house half a dozen times.
I have my orders, sir.
Oh, very well.
Is Miss Irvin at home?
Miss Irvin is not receiving, sir.
Great Scott, man, can't you give us any information?
There's been tragedy in this house, sir, and the truth of it's not known yet. I'm not answering any questions, but I don't have to.
Here now. Does this police guard satisfy you?
Inspector Lestrade. Very good, Inspector. You may come in. May I direct you, gentlemen?
No, thank you. I know this house nearly as well as you do.
I think not, Inspector. I've served here for 27 years. Now, gentlemen, if you're not needing me, I'll return to my quarters.
Bless my soul. That's the sinister looking chap if I ever saw one.
Yes, and he knows something. You see, Lestrade, there is a possibility that Binion is innocent.
Yes, I began to see that, sir, when you were talking to the butler.
You're being very cryptic. What other possibility are you talking about?
The possibility that Binion, the arrested man, is shielding the real murderer. And whom would he be most certain to shield?
You mean his fiancée, Miss Irwin?
That's right, old fellow.
What?
Here we are. This is the anteroom where young Binion worked. And that door there leads into the study where Sir Edward was found.
Nothing been touched, of course, since the discovery of the crime?
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. That's why we've had a constable on duty in there night and day. Before the trial, we're bringing experts in to test the room for secret panels or anything of that kind.
Let's examine the dead man's room, shall we?
Right you are, Mr. Holmes. Webster. Webster, get out of that chair and stand up, can't you? You're on duty.
Asleep. Carty. He's dead.
Yes. The trickle of blood oozing out from the base of his skull.
Well, strike me pink. He's been killed the same way as Sir Edward was.
I presume you'll agree that Mr. Binion didn't commit this murder, Lestrade.
Well, of course not, Mr. Holmes. He couldn't have done it. He's locked up at the yard. Well, what are we going to do?
Ask the butler to come here, will you?
Oh, right you are, sir. What do you make of their wound, Doctor?
Well, it's the description of the one that killed Sir Edward. There's a fine puncture here at the base of the skull. How'd you, Holmes? They mentioned a stiletto or an ice pick. A wound like this might be caused by one of those long steel hatpins that women wear.
Yes, it's a possibility, Watson, a distinct possibility. And Miss Irwin was wearing a long hatpin this morning, if you remember. Plastered walls. A little chance of secret panels here, I should say.
And the window's locked from the inside, eh?
Yeah. Here he is, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, yes. And by the way, what's your name?
Travers, sir.
You see what's happened, Travers?
Yes, sir. I see. The constable's been killed just like my master.
Now, tell me, Travers, is this room exactly as it was in Sir Edward's lifetime?
Yes, sir. Except that my master was not in the habit of keeping the corpses of policemen in here.
Yeah, don't try to be funny, Travers. Don't you realize you're mixed up in a murder case?
I meant no offense, gentlemen.
Marks in their bad taste, my good fellow.
The point of my question, Travers, was to find out if any of the furniture in here had been moved lately.
Not moved, sir. But there has been a piece of furniture added. That armchair the dead man's lying in.
The same chair in which Sir Edward's body was found. Of course, that's the answer. Travers, when was that chair delivered? And who delivered it?
It was delivered the day before Sir Edward died. It came from Silber Schwartz's antique shop in Bond Street,
uh-huh.
Sir.
The game's afoot, Lestrade. See to the removal of this poor man's body. Seal the room, and for heaven's sake, keep this latest death a secret for a day at least. Within that time, I hope to have your murderer for you.
Then we're going...
We're going, my dear chap, to Silber Schwartz's antique shop in Bond Street.
Those old music boxes are quite charming, Holmes, aren't they?
Yes, but where's Mr. Silberschwanz?
This is probably him. What a fine-looking old fellow.
Oh, Mr. Silberschwanz.
Yes, gentlemen. You are interested in musical boxes?
No, sir, in chairs. Particularly in the handsomely carved chair you delivered to Sir Edward Irwin a few days ago.
Ah, yeah, a magnificent specimen. He's pleased with it.
He was found dead in it, Mr. Silberschwanz.
And half an hour ago, someone else was found dead in it also. That chair was one of a pair, wasn't it?
Yeah, but... Holy begotten Himmel. That's impossible. Please, please, to follow me. I will show you it's not possible. Look at the chair.
It's exactly like the same one as Sir Edward's house.
Oh, my friend, but there's such a difference.
15th century Italian, isn't it?
Yeah, this is one of a pair of the famous Malipiero armchairs. There are only three pairs in the world, my friend. Of this pair, one, the one I delivered to Sir Edward, is simply a great specimen of the carver's art. This one, its mate, looks exactly like it, does it not?
Exactly. I can't see any difference, myself.
You would if you sat in it, old chap.
Precisely. That is why I have these cords stretched from one arm of the chair to the other. If anyone were to sit in it well, sometimes nothing will happen. But sooner or later, a hand will press on this hidden spring in the arm here, and death will strike.
But nothing happened when you pressed the spring then, Mr. Silverstone?
No, I don't understand.
I do. This is the harmless chair. The lethal one was sent to Sir Edward. He sat in it, accidentally pressed the spring and drove the fatal needle into his brain.
Just as that poor constable did today.
Sir Edward bought both chairs, I presume?
Yeah, I would not sell this, no, it's a pair separate.
Then why didn't you deliver both at the same time?
He was afraid of the deadly one. Huh? He asked me to keep it here until he found a safe place for it in his home.
Mm-hmm. And some devil switched the arm cord from the fatal chair to the harmless one so that you delivered death to Sir Edward. That is a subtlety in this crime worthy of the fiendish maker of the chairs himself. Silver Schwartz.
Yeah, mein Herr.
Didn't Malapieri die of being tricked into seating himself in one of his own chairs?
Yeah, he did.
Ah, poetic justice. I'm much obliged to you, Silver Schwartz. Now I think I know how to trap our killer.
Well, Dr. Watson, this is quite a story you're telling us tonight. So you found out how the murders had been committed, but not who'd been responsible for it.
That's quite right, Mr. Bartell. Holmes spent a long time cross-examining Mr. Silverschwanz, the owner of the antique store, as to who might have had the opportunity of switching the telltale cord from the fatal chair.
And who did have that opportunity,
well,
Doctor?
Well, Mr. Bartell, it transpires that four people might have been responsible. Edward's daughter, the secretary, Mr. Binion, had both been in the shop with him at various times. So had the butler, Trevor's. The fourth suspect was Sir Edward's eccentric brother, Peregrine, who it appeared had dropped into the shop the day after the purchase had been made. With this last information, Holmes became very excited and launched into eager preparations, which ended a few hours later when we found ourselves disguised as furniture removers, driving a van along a quiet country lane near Dorking as we approached the house of Sir Edward's brother, Peregrine.
There's the house, Watson. Ramshackle-looking place, isn't it?
Yes, extremely so.
Why are you so morose, my dear chap? You've hardly spoken a word on our drive down here.
You never tell me anything. Why are we trundling off into the wilds of the country disguised as furniture removers and carrying the harmless chair with us?
Surely the reason is transparent, old chap?
Yes, it's just about as transparent as golf stocking full of hot tripe.
My dear Watson, surely it's obvious that we're up against an extremely cunning murderer. Now, what advantage accrues to him in using the Malapiero chair?
An alibi, of course. He's nowhere near the place where the murder happened.
Precisely. Apply your logic a little further. Three of the suspects, the daughter, Mr. Binion, and Trevors, the butler, live in the house and would almost certainly have been present at the time of death. Therefore, who gains most by such an alibi?
Well, the brother, Peregrine.
Elementary, my dear Watson. Now you see why we trundled off into the wilds of Dorking.
Well, that must be Peregrine standing up at the porch. He's a funny-looking fella.
Follow my lead, Watson.
Good afternoon, Governor.
You fellows must have come to the wrong house.
You were Mr. Peregrine Irvine, ain't you, Governor?
Yes.
And we come to the right house. All right. Come on, Bertie, give us a hand.
Right you are, Alfie.
What the devil are you unloading an armchair?
Come on, get out of there, sorry, but you drop it on my foot, Bertie, look at. Easy does it. Come on, Bert. That's
I
right.
I got it.
All right. Set her down easy now on the porch here.
There you go. That's it.
Give me the crickets. And a pretty chair, Governor. Bertie and me was admiring it on our way down here.
Cool, blimey. Isn't off a nice chair.
But who told you to bring it here?
Orders, Governor. Mr. Silver Snitch. Whatever his name is. Told us your brother didn't want the chair and said as how we was to bring it to you.
But my brother's dead.
Mr. Silver Snitch said... He gave the order before he died. Mind if I sit down in it, Governor?
Of course not.
Cool, lummy. Bit of all right, isn't it?
Look at him laughing.
Who wish me old Trouble and Strife could see me now?
Trouble and Strife?
Yeah. Trouble and Strife, that's my wife, Governor. Here, sit down yourself, sir. Come on, go on, sit down, try it. Go on, Governor. Take the weight off your plates of meat.
What barbaric jargon do you speak? What on earth are plates of meat?
Plates of meat is feet, Governor. That's rhyming slang.
That's right. Rhyming slang. Go on, sit down in it. Go on.
All right, very well.
There now. Ain't that comfortable? Yeah, go on. Run your hands over the arms, Governor. Ain't that carving pretty? Ain't it just ducky?
Yes, it is. But I don't want the wretched thing. There's been some mistake. So you'd better take it back to London and tell them to sell it. I don't want anything of my brother.
Jump in, Jehoshaphat. Can't see where you don't want to sit in a nice chair like this, Governor.
But you're the one that gives the orders around here. Come on, Bertie. Come on, get your bag into it.
All right, Alfie.
Let's get back in the van. All right, come on.
Away they go.
Oh, bless your heart, Governor. We don't worry about that sort of thing, do we, Bertie?
Of course not, Alfie. We'd had a nice drive in the country anyhow, didn't we?
That's right. Let's get these old horses going. Good day, Governor.
Good day,
Governor. Good. That was a false trail, Holmes. Obviously, he knew nothing about the chair. He thought it was perfectly harmless.
And indeed it was. But the murderer were the Fordick people. I've slipped up in my reasoning somehow. Confound. Oh, but of course. Oh, what a fool I am. We must get back to London as fast as these tired nags can take us. Come on, get up there. Get up.
What's the next move, Holmes?
Back to Sedgwick's house and the staging of a little drama that I'm sure will give us the final answer to this problem.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I've got Miss Irving, young Binion, and the butler waiting outside.
And no one knows we switched the chair.
Splendid.
You're sure that this is the harmless chair, Holmes?
Of course I am. Look here. I sit in it. So, run my hands over the arms. Yes, this chair is harmless, as every person save one will know. Show them in, Lestrade.
All at once, Mr. Holmes?
No, I think we'll take Miss Irving and Mr. Binion first.
Well, right you are, sir.
Irving,
Mr. Binion,
come in, please.
Very well. Oh, Mr. Holmes.
What's the matter, Miss Irving?
It's just so horrible seeing you there in the same chair where I saw Father.
Oh.
Mr. Holmes, it's a trifle too macabre for you to assume the position of the corpse. Please get up.
But it seems to be the most comfortable chair in the room, and I do like my comfort when I interrogate witnesses. However, it's hardly chivalrous, is it? Miss Irving, please sit down, won't you?
I don't like to sit down in the chair in which Father died.
Oh, Miss Irving, we couldn't bear to see you standing.
Very well, then.
Don't sit down, Harry.
Why not, Binion? What's the matter? Isn't the chair safe?
No,
it's not. Then perhaps you care to sit in it. To prove that the chair is safe.
No, I...
Sit down.
Very well. There.
Splendid. Curious chair, isn't it, Mr. Binion? I wonder about these carvings on the arms. They look almost as if they might activate concealed springs. I wonder what would happen if I...
No, for heaven's sake, Mr. Holmes, you're trying to kill me.
Kill you? Then you know how Sir Edward and the policeman were murdered, eh?
I knew it must have something to do with the chair.
You knew more than that, Robert. You planned it. I remember now that when we went to the shop,
Be quiet, Harry!
Come back here, you!
Robert!
No, Watson, don't go after them. The start will stop him. In any case, the police are at the door. Oh, I'm tired. I think I'll sit in this rather fateful armchair.
So it was young Binion all the time, eh?
Yes, and he all but outsmarted me. I reasoned that somehow the murderer must have intended the device of this chair to clear him. And suddenly I saw the real motivation. How better establish his innocence than seeming to be obviously guilty and yet leaving a trail whereby an astute deduction could seem to clear him.
Yes, it's his idea that Miss Irving came to you. He used you as a cat's paw.
That's right, Watson. I'm afraid this whole case is a rather humiliating experience for me.
Well, why do you say that?
The guard had arrested the right man in the first place. Oh, my dear Watson, I shall never hear the end of this. Never.
As usual, Doctor, that was a swell story. Imagine Lestrade accidentally arresting the right man.
Well, he had that one coming to him. Poor fellow, he'd been outwitted by Holmes so many times, he was beginning to get an inferiority complex.
What about Miss Irving? How did she take it when her boyfriend Binion has proved guilty?
Well, when she realized that her sweetheart had actually murdered her father, as they say in the penny thrillers, her love turned to hate. But at first, he took it pretty bad.
I can imagine so.
Mr. Bartell, my boy, that's one of the disadvantages of being a detective. When you bring the guilty to justice, you very often cause the innocent to suffer too.
Well, Dr. Watson, what new Sherlock Holmes adventure are you planning to tell us next week?
The Haunting of Sherlock Holmes.
Doctor, that's one I've got to listen to.
Yes, Mr. Bartell. And everyone should also listen to what Secretary of Agriculture Anderson says about saving used kitchen fat. We've all got to keep turning in every bit of used fat. take it to your meat dealer. The shortage of fats is worse now than ever it was. And unless we help, and we all help, we'll all be faced with a serious shortage of soap. Yes, and a serious shortage of paint, lubricating oils, drugs, and many other things that require fats in their manufacture. It's up to us. Keep turning in every bit of used kitchen fat.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Musgrove Ritual. Music is by Dean Faulkner. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, untuned to yesterday from the 13th of May, 1946, from the Mutual Broadcasting System. Although billed as The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the story was based on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Adventure of the Musgrave Ritual, first in print in England's Strand magazine in 1893. The story was a bit of a departure from Conan Doyle's other Holmes works, insofar as Dr. Watson was not the person telling the story, but in fact, Sherlock Holmes. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Box 13, the second-to-last broadcast in the syndicated run, the story called The Clay Pigeon, from August 7th, 1949.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of the Star Times. If your advertisement, Adventure Wanted, will go anyplace, do anything, is bona fide, do this. Call Yorkside 89078 and ask for Dr. Ogden. Make an appointment with him. Then phone Madison 9548 and ask for Mr. Alexander. When you've done these two things, you will receive further instructions. I will wait until 3 tomorrow afternoon.
Receive further instructions. I will wait until 3 tomorrow afternoon for your call. If you want money, I can arrange that. If you want adventure only, this will give it to you. There was no signature, so I assumed the letter was from the mysterious Mr. Alexander, who liked telephones. I was right. It was his nickel and $1 million worth of trouble.
I wonder why you're to make an appointment with a doctor, Mr. Holliday.
I don't know, Susie, but it's a very interesting letter. I'll tell you what, suppose you dial the first number for me, and we'll get in touch with Dr. Ogden.
Uh-huh. Let's see, that was Yorkside 89078.
When you get the number, ask for Dr. Ogden, Susie.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Hello. Dr. Ogden, please.
This is Dr. Ogden speaking.
Oh, thank you. Just a minute. He's on the line. Answered the phone himself.
Oh, thanks. Hello, Dr. Ogden.
Yes?
I'd like to make an appointment to see you.
Today?
Well, let's say at your convenience.
Well, would tomorrow be all right with you?
Fine. What time?
2 o'clock sharp.
2 o'clock sharp. Fine.
You know the address?
Well, no, you'd better give it to me.
Certainly. 7869 River Lane Terrace.
Oh, just a second. Susie.
Uh-huh.
Take this down. That was 7869 River Lane Terrace.
Yes, that's it.
Okay, tomorrow at 2, then.
I'll be waiting for you.
Oh, just a second, Doctor.
Yes?
Don't you want to know who I am?
No. I prefer to find it out my way. Goodbye.
What did he say?
I don't know, but it sounded like, I prefer to find it out my way.
Let's call that other number, Madison 9548. Want me to get it for you?
Might as well. There's no fun being on first base if there's a chance of scoring. Go ahead. Now, what kind of a doctor prefers to find out the names of his patients his own way?
Hello?
Mr. Alexander?
Yes, who's this?
Just a second. Here he is, the party of the second part.
Oh, okay. Hello, this is Box 13, Mr. Alexander.
Oh, yes. Did you call Dr. Ogden?
Yes, I did. I have an appointment with him for 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Good. Will you keep it?
Well, that all depends on what's going to happen next.
Now, can you remember a name and a message?
Well, I think so. I've remembered my own name for a long time.
Good. Here's the name. Listening?
I'm still here.
Matthew Carey. Did you get it?
Matthew Carey, right?
Yes. Now, remember this. The dead shall not stay dead. Did you hear it?
I thought you said the dead shall not stay dead.
That's correct. It's not difficult to remember.
You're right, Mr. Alexander. But now that I have the name Matthew Carey in the message, what do I do with him?
I think you'll know what to do when you see Dr. Ogden. Goodbye.
Hey, Alexander. Hey.
He hung up, huh?
Yeah, he hung up. Susie, this is either a big rib or it starts out as one of the craziest chases I've ever had.
Well, all you can do is see Dr. Ogden tomorrow at 2.
Yeah, see Dr. Ogden tomorrow at 2. Okay, Susie, hung for a sheep as well as a lamb. Dr. Ogden will see me tomorrow. So, the next day at 2 o'clock sharp, I pushed a bell button underneath the neat little brass plate that said Dr. Ogden. I waited, and the door clicked and swung open by itself. I stood in a dimly lighted hall. I was getting accustomed to the lights when the door closed behind me. Then I heard...
Please come down the hall.
Hmm? Where are you?
Second door to your left as you walk this way down the hall away from the front door. Please come in.
Oh, thank you.
How do you do? Please close the door and come in.
Thank you again.
I'm very happy to see that you're prompt. You're the gentleman who called yesterday about 2 o'clock, yes?
Yes, I called about that time.
Good. Please be seated across the table from me. Now, may I ask who sent you to me?
A mutual friend.
May I ask the name of this mutual friend?
Mr. Alexander.
I don't seem to recall that name. Alexander? Alexander.
Yes, Alexander.
Well, no matter.
You are Dr. Ogden.
Yes, why do you ask?
Well, I had no way of recognizing you, Doctor. For all I know, you may be someone else.
I see you're a skeptic.
About what?
Don't you know?
Huh? Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Shall we proceed?
By all means, I'm very anxious to proceed, but first my name is...
Please don't tell me. I have other ways of finding that out.
Oh?
First, we shall dim the lights. I control them from my chair here. You can still see me?
Very dimly.
Your eyes will become accustomed to this light in a moment. Now, there's a drawer on your side of the table. Please open it. You'll find a pad of paper and some pencils in there. Select any pencil and take the pad of paper.
Okay, I've done it.
Close the drawer.
Now what do I do?
Please write your name on one of the slips of paper from the pad, anyone. Underneath your name, write a question. Some problem that is worrying you. I shall attempt to advise you. I hope your skepticism does not interfere with our rapport.
Wait a minute. You mean you are...
What were you going to say?
Let me get this straight. I'm to write my name on a slip of paper.
Yes, and underneath any message, question, problem.
Mm-hmm. Name. And a message. All right, that's done. Now what?
Fold the slip of paper and place it under the teacup in the center of the table.
There you are, Dr. Ogden.
Good, good. We shall have to dim the lights a little more. More. I am trying to establish contact with your mind. I am trying to feel the psychic rapport between us. Think. Think of your name and the message. Think of them. Ah, I see that your name is Matthew Carey. No, no! Who are you? Where did you come from?
Now, wait a minute, Dr. Ogden. Take it easy.
Get out! Get out! You're crazy! You know nothing! Get out!
Calm down a minute, will you? Why should my name make you jump out of your chair like
it's
that?
It's not your name! Please, you don't know anything. You can't know.
What's the matter with you, Doctor?
Please, get out of here! Go!
Well, all right. But how did you know what name was on that slip of paper under the teacup?
I said get out, or I'll have you thrown out!
Well, an invitation like that, what else is there to do? I left Dr. Ogden feeling a little as though I'd struck a match and a house a mile away went up in flames. Who was Matthew Carey? More important at the moment, who was Mr. Alexander? I stepped into a drugstore on the way back to my office, dialed Madison 9548. No Mr. Alexander. It was a payphone in a market. It seemed that Mr. Alexander had sat patiently waiting for my call to him. Later in my apartment... Hello?
Ah, Mr. Holliday?
Ah, Mr. Alexander.
Yes.
Which market are you calling from now?
So you called back, eh?
Yes, I called back. Look, Alexander, if it was your intention to frighten Dr. Ogden out of his next 10 years, you did.
It was my intention, Mr. Holliday.
Wait a minute. You know my name, my telephone number here at my apartment. How come?
I saw you go into Dr. Ogden's. When you came out, I followed you.
Very simple.
Elementary.
Okay, suppose we go to a little higher learning now. Who is Matthew Carey? And why did that name and message frighten Ogden out of his wits?
Are you interested, Mr. Holliday?
I think so, Mr. Alexander. But I'd like to know what the game is.
Will you go on with it?
I'll admit it has its points.
Good. Well, then, you saw the reaction the name and message got from Dr. Ogden.
The electric chair would have been a little less irritating to him.
Then play along. He'll undoubtedly come to see you or try to contact you in some way. See him, talk with him. But whatever he says or does, don't let on what you're doing.
Mr. Alexander, that is the simplest thing in the world for me to do because I haven't the least idea what it is I'm doing.
When he contacts you, be mysterious. Pretend you know something.
What makes you think that I'm that good an actor?
Please do it. You won't be sorry.
I still think it's a rib, a joke.
Oh, it is, Mr. Holliday. But the joke is on our friend Dr. Ogden.
Oh, he's not laughing.
He doesn't have a sense of humor. But will you play along for just a little while longer?
If you'll tell me one thing.
And what's that?
Where does it all end? And what good is it doing you?
I'm not sure where it will end. As for the good it does me, it will keep me from being killed. Good night.
Well, Mr. Alexander's last words sat me up straight. I wanted to go to the police, but with what? I'd never seen Mr. Alexander, and as far as I knew, he had a lot of nickels to put in phone slots. He'd never give me a chance to trace a call, so I sat tight and waited. And I didn't have too long to wait, because that same night... Yes, who is it?
Dr. Ogden. Mr. Holliday, may I see you?
Oh, Dr. Ogden. Just a second. How did you find me? Psychic rapport?
No, I followed you earlier this afternoon.
Oh. Did you have company?
Company?
Skip it. Is there something on your mind, Dr. Ogden?
Yes. Look here. Why did you come to me this afternoon?
Maybe because of Matthew Carey.
How did you know? Who are you?
You followed me here. You came to my apartment. You ought to know my name.
Yes, Holliday, but that isn't your real name. For heaven's sake, man, will you please talk?
I'd like a little time to think it over.
Then you haven't gone to the police?
No, I haven't. Do you want me to?
Are you crazy?
How much do you think I know, Dr. Ogden?
Look, Holliday, or whatever your name is, I'm willing to pay you to keep quiet. You must realize, of course, I don't have to pay you a cent.
Oh, of course you don't.
But I want no bad publicity. Be bad for my business. Now, how much?
I told you I want some time to think it over.
How long?
I'll let you know when I'm ready to talk business with you.
Meanwhile, you'll not go to the police?
No, Dr. Ogden, I won't go to the police.
Thank you. I assure you, Mr. Holliday, you won't be sorry.
I hope not. Now, good night, Dr. Ogden.
Good night, and... You will let me hear from you.
I promise just as soon as I come to a conclusion.
Then, good night.
For a moment, I stood there after Ogden left. I listened to make sure he'd gone. Then I stepped out into the hall and down the stairs into the lobby. Ogden was out of sight. But to make sure, I asked the clerk.
Yes, I saw him, Mr. Holliday. He's gone.
Thanks. There was no one with him.
I didn't see anyone.
Okay, I'm going to step outside for a minute and be right back. Hold any calls that come.
Yes, sir, Mr. Holliday.
There was no one in sight on the sidewalk. The traffic was thin. I was almost sure that Ogden hadn't come alone. Why, I don't know. But I walked a little piece down the street. I was about 50 yards away from my apartment building when...
Psst. Mr. Holliday. Holliday.
Huh? Who is it?
Alexander.
Where are you?
In this doorway. I didn't want Ogden to see me. Please come here.
Come on out. Let me take a look at you.
No, I've got to be sure Ogden doesn't see me.
He's gone.
I can't take the chance. Now, please come here. I want to tell you something.
All right. Okay, what have you got to tell me?
This.
Feeling better now, Mr. Holliday?
Oh, how'd I get back in the lobby?
I found you.
How did you happen to be looking for me?
Well, there was a call for you. I stepped out on the pavement and saw someone lying in that doorway.
Yes, and there I was, all tucked away. The original Clay Pigeon, Dan Holliday.
Shall I call the police?
No, wait a minute.
You've got your wallet.
Mm-hmm. My watch, my change, my ring.
There's nothing missing?
No, not a thing missing.
Well, that's funny.
The word you want is peculiar. It's anything but funny anymore. But I would like to know why he slugged me and then left me with all my money and...
Your keys. Have you got all of them?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all here, but look at this one, Charlie. You see anything?
Well, yeah, there's some green stuff on it.
Mm-hmm. Modeling clay.
Looks like it.
So Mr. Alexander wanted to make an impression of this key to my office.
Why?
Charlie, someday I'm going to catch up with Mr. Alexander and get an answer to a lot of questions. What did Mr. Alexander want in my office? The only way to find that out was to go there. I called Susie, got her out of bed, and an hour later met her at the office.
Gee, I was scared when you called, Mr. Holliday.
Yeah, but I needed you to take a look around this office. See if anything's missing. You take that side of the room, Susie. I'll fine come over here.
But there's nothing here worth stealing. File cabinets are still locked.
None of them forced?
They don't look like it.
Open them and look inside.
All right.
Not a paper disturbed, not even a pencil out of place. Okay, I'm crazy. I give up. How about the cabinets, Susie?
Gee, they're just like I left them when I went home. I remember straightening them today because I wanted to find them.
Okay, let's forget it.
You know what I think, Mr. Holliday?
No, what do you think, Susie?
I think Mr. Alexander is a lunatic.
Well, tell him to move over. He's getting company. The guy slugs me, makes an impression of my office key, and... And now what?
You know, Mr. Holliday, I think you ought to find out about that Matthew Carey.
Hey, that's an idea, Susie. Okay, pack up and go home now. Tomorrow, you and I are going to the morgue of the Star Times, and we'll see what we shall see. It took Susie and me the better part of 2 hours to dig through old files, but finally we came up with something. Susie read a paragraph to me. A paragraph from a Sunday supplement.
The murder of Matthew Carey has never been solved. The only suspect was Marvin Smith, who disappeared mysteriously and has never been located. Carey and Smith were partners in a mind-reading and psychic act, and they...
Hold it, Susie.
Does that give you a hint?
More. It tells me Dr. Ogden's real name. Marvin Smith. Susie, Ogden is a mysteriously disappeared suspect.
Sure, but... Who is Mr. Alexander?
Go ahead. Read some more.
Okay. Matthew Carey's body was claimed by a brother, Philip Carey. Philip, at his brother's inquest, was dramatic in his denunciation of police and in his vow to track down his brother's killer. Later, he too disappeared. The Matthew Carey case remains another famous unsolved murder. Gee, Dr. Ogden killed Matthew Carey.
Yeah, that's the way it looks. Now, all I've got to figure out is what I'm doing in the act. Why did Philip Carey send me to Dr. Ogden in the first place?
To scare him.
Oh, that was only part of it. Obviously, Susie, Carey, or Mr. Alexander, as I shall fondly remember him, wanted to make Ogden think that someone was on to him. But why pick on me? Later, I called the police and let them know that Dr. Ogden and Marvin Smith were one and the same. Or at least I thought they were. The police went in to see him, but once more he had dropped off the face of the earth, and I looked like a prize sap for giving the tip-off. Then that afternoon...
Want me to answer it, Mr. Holliday?
All right, but let me take it, Susie. Hello?
Holliday?
Yeah. Dr. Ogden, isn't it?
Yes.
Where have you been?
Listen to me. I agree to your terms.
You what?
I said I agree to your terms.
Oh. You agree to my terms? Well, that's nice.
I can't talk any longer. I've got to go now. But I agree to your terms. Goodbye.
Ogden. You know, Susie, someday I'm going to have that instrument taken out and thrown in the river.
Is something the matter?
Yeah, something's the matter, and it's all with me.
That was Dr. Ogden, huh?
That was Dr. Ogden. And he agrees to my terms.
He agrees to your terms? What terms?
That's the question, Susie. What terms? Oh, no, not again.
I'll answer it.
No, I brought this on myself. I'll take it. Hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. Holliday.
Well, Mr. Alexander, how do you do?
How's your head?
How would your head be after a bolero was drummed out on it?
Oh, I'm very sorry I had to do that, but it was necessary.
Alexander, if I could only see you just once.
How would you like to do just that tonight?
Well, what do you mean?
Meet me at midnight tonight at the corner of Bay Boulevard and Shore Drive.
It's a pretty lonely neighborhood. What's the idea?
You would like to see this finished, wouldn't you?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Then meet me, but come alone. Absolutely alone, understand?
What if I don't?
I'll be very disappointed in you. Goodbye.
What now, Mr. Holliday?
Good question, Susie. I've already made the police think I'm a little off by sending them after Ogden. Okay, I'll meet Mr. Alexander tonight. But not before I do a lot of thinking. So I thought, and thought, and made up my mind to meet Alexander. But I also made up my mind to get there ahead of time. So I drove to within 3 blocks of Bay Boulevard and Shore Drive, parked, and began to walk quietly. I stayed in the shadows and made sure I wasn't being followed. Then I saw him. A man crouched behind a billboard. Someone had the same idea I had. Get there early and avoid the rush. Well, at last I was going to meet Mr. Alexander, but not face to face. I crept up in back of him and... Easy, Alexander. Take it easy.
Holliday.
Huh? Ogden.
Please. I was going to meet you as you asked. I was just seeing if everything was clear.
Meet me? At Bay Boulevard and Shore Drive?
Yes, that's what you said.
I said? Let that go for a minute. Why are you waiting a block away from the corner?
Why, I told you I just wanted to see if all was clear.
Hold still a minute. Oh, nice gun you've got here, Dr. Ogden. Was I going the way of Matthew Carey?
No, I swear it. Look, see? I brought the money. $5,000, as you said in your letter.
Letter? What letter?
This one.
Give it to me. And stand a little distance from me.
Do you want more? I'll get it. Only please, don't kill me. Please.
Shut up. Was this letter sent to you?
Yes, I... Why are you asking that?
Now I get it, I think.
Huh?
Look, Ogden, it's still 20 minutes before midnight. And you're going to do what I say. Walk to the meeting place. I'll join you at midnight. And you pass over the money. But I'll keep your gun just in case.
What are you talking about?
You'll do as I say, or we'll go to the police right now. Mr. Marvin Smith.
Smith?
Oh, that hit home, didn't it? Okay, we wait 10 minutes, and you start toward the meeting place. At midnight, I walked toward the corner. It was very dark, and I could just make out Ogden's silhouette.
Holliday.
Yeah. Now, remember what you're to do. Hand me that package of money.
It's here.
Now, as I walk away, I'll fire your gun. I'll drop to the pavement. You stand right there. Get it?
Yes.
Okay. Here goes.
Who is it?
Hello, Smith.
Philip. Philip Carey.
You did just exactly what I thought you'd do, Smith. You killed him. Now I'm going to kill you as you killed Matthew. Don't move. Keep your back toward me. Now take a moment, Smith. Take a moment to think how it must have felt to my brother. But now...
Drop that gun, Carey. Drop it.
You dirty meddler.
Ogden, quick, down, drop.
You shot him, Holiday.
Just in the hand.
Killed Matthew. Let me get at him.
The police will take care of him and you. And I'll be glad to see it. Because I don't like being a clay pigeon. Now, let's get going, both of you. I've got to explain a few things to my secretary.
So Mr. Alexander, or Philip Carey, took just one piece of stationery and wrote Ogden a blackmail letter on your typewriter. That's why we found nothing missing.
Right, Susie. One piece of paper wouldn't be missed. But if it hadn't been for the clay on the key, I wouldn't have known he even got in here.
But what was he going to do?
It was a beautiful setup, Susie. He sent Ogden the blackmail letter. Ogden thought I sent it and was blackmailing him. Ogden was set to kill me, which is just what Alexander or Carey wanted. Okay, so Ogden kills me. Then Alexander steps in, kills Ogden, puts the gun in my dead little hand, and goes away for good.
And then?
And what did the police find? $5,000 in my pocket, a blackmail letter to Ogden written on my stationery, my typewriter. It's an open and shut case, shut right on my neck.
Aha, but there's one thing wrong.
What?
I could have testified differently. I knew the whole thing. Alexander wouldn't have gotten away with it.
I don't like to keep things from you, Susie, but I was going to.
Hmm? What?
Mr. Alexander would have come after you.
Mr. Holliday, let's take the ad out of the Star Times for a while.
Then what will we do for excitement? Good night, Susie.
Listen in again next week when, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13.
Box 13, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of August, 1949. A syndicated episode wrapping up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.